What it do, baby?
Hey, what's going on? Welcome to episode number 737, I think. I have no idea. I always lose track after the weekend of Locked On Raptors. I'm your host, Sean Woodley of RaptorsHQ.com. You can find me on Twitter, as always, at WoodleySean. You can find the show at Locked On Raptors, where you can find links to every single episode of the podcast. And of course, please make sure you're checking out the entirety of the Locked On Podcast Network. We've got great stuff covering all of the ill-fated returns of all the big pro sports right now. Baseball, basketball, hockey, which is apparently the sport that has its stuff together the most, which is unbelievable. Either way, you can listen to all of those shows, the national shows, the local team shows, and get the latest on all the plans to return to play for all these leagues. As misguided as they may be, they're still happening, which of course leads me into today's podcast as well. I've been trying my best over the last couple weeks to stop wallowing in the despair of waiting for this tournament to happen, and for the NBA to return, only to probably be canceled soon after because it's out of control down in Florida. You know, my fear of the Raptors being the first team down in Florida, kind of being the human guinea pigs for this entire operation. It's all very gross, but I'm trying to lean into the basketball as well, because there will be basketball, and as bad an idea as I think it is, watching the basketball will be fun if and when it does take place. And it's been a very long time since we watched any basketball. It's been over almost 4 months now, and I kind of forgot, or have forgotten, about what all these teams have been up to that are kind of in the Raptors range in the Eastern Conference. And so for the next couple weeks here, I'm going to be checking in with some smart people who cover each of the teams that are in the Eastern Conference to kind of get a bit of a refresher on where they're at and where they were before things, you know, hit the fan, as it were, and just kind of get an update as we head into the Orlando bubble at the end of the month. And joining me today to talk about our first team on the list, there is no rhyme or reason to the order in which I'm talking about these teams. They're just teams, and I'm deciding the order as I go. It is a wonderful writer, one of the very best on NBA internet, from Bleacher Report, Miami Heat Beat, SB Nation NBA, Dime Up Rocks, Five Reasons Sports, all over the place. It is Nikias Duncan making his debut on the podcast. Nikias, how are you, man?
I am doing well, doing even better after that fantastic intro.
Hey, man, you kick ass, and it's my dumb fault for not having you on this podcast sooner. It's very silly that it took more than 700 episodes to get you on, but glad you're here, and glad we can talk about the Miami Heat, which is a team that was very good this season, obviously, a team that I certainly had some questions about and was maybe not as high on as some people were, especially after they made their trades for Andre Iguodala, and I think Solomon Hill was in there, and a couple other guys they picked up at the deadline. Jay Crowder was in that mix as well. And I guess let's start there, Nikias. There wasn't a ton of time in between the trade deadline and the pause to kind of get a read on how the Heat were, you know, adjusting to life with Iguodala and Jay Crowder. But what were your sort of impressions in that early stage, you know, those few games that we did get to see, as to how it was working? And did you think the Heat were a better, worse, same team as they were before the deadline?
I feel like the result has mostly been the same. I think they're mostly the same team, though the process is a little bit different. Miami made that trade primarily to bolster their wing rotation. It gives them a little bit more optionality on the defensive end. Mm-hmm. They're primarily a drop defense team. And since the trade, they've switched a lot more. And I think that comes from them playing a little bit smaller, having some Iguodala and Crowder lineups out there with Bam Adebayo. We haven't seen much of the Crowder Iguodala Butler trio yet. But I think that's going to be a playoff thing that we definitely see more of, assuming that the shooting holds. Jay Crowder has been the surprise of the trade, I feel like, because he has been a 3-point marksman since he's been in Miami, which is a bit odd because he's basically been an average shooter throughout his career. He had that one good 3-point shooting year in Boston. He's kind of been underwhelming since then. So I'm kind of waiting on the regression to hit in that regard. But he's been good defensively. Andre Iguodala has been, I would say, above average defensively. Definitely can't hang with quicker guards anymore, but he's still very intelligent, good off ball, holds his own against wings, which is all you really need him to do. Obviously, haven't seen much from Solomon Hill yet. I'm not sure what the plans are for him, but I think Miami got mostly what they were looking for. They wanted some more wing contributions. I'm still not a fan of them giving up Justice Winslow to do it, which kind of leads me into why I think the process is still the same. Miami did become a more switch-heavy team defensively, but their issues are at the point of attack, and trading Justice Winslow to get more wing help seems kind of counterproductive.
Yeah, that makes sense. It's a team that sort of – when I've watched the Heat, especially this year, and like I guess in recent years as well, like they always kind of seem like they're an incredible defensive team. They always seem like they are just like mean and nasty. Bam in particular has had some really good games against the Raptors, and I think that maybe sort of stands out. And obviously Jimmy Butler is a very good defender too. But yeah, when you kind of dig down more and you look at the point of attack defenders, like you mentioned, you got Goran Dragic, you've got, you know, Duncan Robinson and Tyler Hero on the wings. You've got Kendrick Nunn, who's maybe not, you know, the best guy you would want to throw out there as a one-on-one. You know, I'm thinking of like as a fan of a team that has Fred VanVleet and Kyle Lowry, in particular VanVleet, like you're not seeing anyone of that sort of ilk on the on the Heat's roster. And I guess that probably explains why they had to play that drop system a little bit. But when you throw in, you know, Iguodala and Crowder, it does seem like it would lead to a market improvement just because of the defensive talent on the floor. But my issue with the Heat when they made that deal was they still, to me, seem like a team that no matter what, they're always going to have some weakness, whether it's on the offensive end or on the defensive end. Like I'm thinking again, sort of back to like last year's Raptors team where everyone was a good offensive player who could at least shoot a three and make like a rudimentary read, and everyone was a good defender. You don't have that in a lot of Miami's lineups just because there is a shooting deficiency with Iguodala or Butler there, or there's a bit of a defensive weakness when it comes to a Hero or a Nunn or a Myers Leonard or whatever it might be. Would you say that's like a fair criticism of the way the Heat are built right now?
Yes, and I think just going back to the trade, I think that's where Justice Winslow was a major wild card, because I think he could have been the guy that connected all of it. As mentioned, he's a guy that could guard all three perimeter positions, can hang with some fours as well on the offensive end, can get to the rim. He's had some finishing issues in the past, but he seems to be turning a little bit of a corner there. But the three-point shooting was the swing skill for him. He was a guy that shot high 30s percent from the three-point line over the last couple of years and started off the year terribly this year, which I think also played a role in Miami being willing to give up on him. They obviously didn't trust the shot, among other things. So I think if Justice Winslow could have got up to that 34, 35% range for three, especially since those were primarily going to be on spot-ups, I think that he would have been the guy that kind of connected everything. They would have had the defensive range. They would have been able to switch if they wanted to. Justice Winslow is really good at fighting over screens, so they could have continued to play drop if they wanted to do that. Would have gave them some optionality to go small. But still, I think that issue is still there. If you put in Goran Dragic, that helps with offensive spacing, gives another reliable shot creator alongside Jimmy Butler and Bam Adebayo. But Dragic is also the worst defender on the roster. Kendrick Nunn has some three-level scoring potential, but he's bad at the point of attack.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it's – sorry, carry on there.
I was just going to say, even with Miami go small, which is a thing I anticipate when they hit the playoffs, I think we're going to see some Butler, Iguodala, Crowder, and Bam lineups. You're going to need at least three of those guys to shoot. There's nowhere to go but up for Jimmy Butler this year. His jump baddest it's ever been, which is amazing because he's still been probably a top 12 player in the league this year despite the jumper. So, I mean, you hope for some positive progression there. But you're going to have to hope for Crowder to stay high, for Iguodala to kind of find his form, at least in the corners. And if Bam shows some more willingness to take mid-range jumpers, I think that's going to be enough, but it's going to be tough.
Yeah, definitely. We'll take a look at what the Heat are going to look like once we get into the Orlando playoff situation in just a second and kind of where they stand. But first, I want to tell people about rockauto.com, which for a car dummy like me is just a wonderful site to go to get auto parts that you need without getting, you know, worked by the people who work at the mechanic shop who are going to upcharge you and charge you way more than you have to pay. Rockauto.com is a family business serving auto parts customers online for 20 years. Go to rockauto.com to shop for auto and body parts from hundreds of manufacturers. They've got everything you could possibly need, from engine control modules, brake parts, tail lamps, motor oil, fuel pump assemblies. Pretty much anything that is in a car is available on the rockauto.com catalog, whether it's for your classic that you're fixing up or for your daily driver and you're a car dummy like me who just uses your car to get from point A to point B. Everything you need is in a few easy clicks available and delivered directly to your door. The rockauto.com catalog is unique and remarkably easy to navigate. Quickly see all the parts available for your vehicle and choose the brand specifications and prices that you prefer. Best of all prices on rockauto.com are reliably low, and the same for professionals and do-it-yourselfers. Why spend up to twice as much for the exact same parts? That's silly. Go to rockauto.com right now and see all the parts available for your car or truck. Write "Locked On" in their "How did you hear about us" box so they know that we sent you as well. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the car parts you're ever going to need at rockauto.com. All right, Nikhil. So just to sort of refresh where the Heat are going into the Miami or the Orlando bubble, they currently sit seventh in the NBA in offense, kind of in a slew of teams between like 3 and, I don't know, like 14, all within like 1 or 2 points of each other. So not a ton of distinction there. On defense, as you mentioned off the top, they are in 14th as of right now, 109.2 points allowed per 100 possessions. And it hasn't been a ton better since the pause either, or sorry, since the trade deadline either, where they are kind of middle of the pack in both offense and defense and kind of unmoving in defense. They dropped just one spot to 15, 14 in offense. And that's sort of where they sit going into here. Do you think there's going to be much in the way of like appreciable change with the way the rotation is looking, with the way Eric Spoelstra runs out the roster as we go into this postseason here, Nikhil? I mean, I feel like every coach has probably spent the last 4 months just like stewing on ways to better use their team. And so yeah. I'm curious, you know, Eric Spoelstra is a very smart guy. I wonder if maybe some time to sit with the results of that first month or so will be useful as they go into this thing as the number 4 seed right now in the Eastern Conference. Pretty comfortably, I think, going to be the 4 seed. You know, the Pacers and Sixers will fight it out, but there's a 2-game lead for Miami over the Pacers, who do not have Victor Oladipo, and I think are likely to be that 6th seed. The Sixers have a pretty easy schedule, but that's still, you know, making up more than 2 games in 8 games is going to be tough for any team. So I'm assuming the 4th seed is going to be where it is. Nikhil, again, like I said, do you see much in the way of change from the way the team played before to what they will look like once they get to Orlando?
I'm not sure there's going to be a drastic shift in how they play. I do think we're going to see some rotation changes. One of the, I guess, under-discussed plots of Miami making the trades is that they did so while also being without Myers Leonard and Tyler Hero. Mm-hmm. It represents two of their best 4 shooters in the rotation. Myers Leonard is a part of Miami's starting lineup that was plus 13.4 points per possession, per 100 possessions, in a lot of minutes. Was easily one of the best starting lineups in the league. Myers Leonard obviously isn't a household name by any means, but he stretches the floor and he protects the rim well enough to where you have to where Miami can end possessions and get back out on the other end. Obviously, Bam Adebayo is the guy to kind of clean up a lot of the mess as a weak side defender. But Myers Leonard held things down. He had good chemistry in the pick and roll with Jimmy Butler, with Kendrick Nunn whenever they were running. So it's going to be interesting to see what Eric Spoelstra does with the front court specifically, because Myers Leonard was a pretty big part of their best lineup. And he's been out for about a month. He's been out for more than a month now with the pandemic. But he's healthy and ready to go now. So that's going to be the biggest change I think Miami makes.
Oh, that's a good point. Yeah, Myers Leonard, sneaky, like, pretty good this year, which is not something I expected when that deal went down. But good for him. The Heat seem to like make all these guys like passable as NBA players, which is exhausting. But I guess, you know, similar thing that the Raptors end up doing a lot of the time as well. So looking at the standings and how they shake out right now, like I said, the 4 seed seems pretty likely. They're 2.5 games back of Boston right now. Boston has, I believe, the 2nd or 3rd easiest schedule in the NBA. And I think it's more likely that they perhaps track down the Raptors for 2 than they do fall back to 4. Although I don't think much movement in that 1, 2, 3, 4 is likely anyway. Then you look below Miami, and you have obviously the Pacers, who, like I said, without Victor Oladipo, probably pretty depleted. We don't know if Malcolm Brogdon's going to play. I know he tested positive like last week, so I guess we'll see on that front. And then the 76ers loom in the 6th seed. I don't think I need to ask you the question, who do you think Heat fans would rather play between the Pacers or the 76ers? So I'll just ask you, when the 4-5 Heat-Sixers series inevitably begins in mid-August down in Orlando with Jimmy Butler playing his old team in what will be surely a very fun series, probably even a more fun series than that super crazy series the Heat and Sixers played back a couple years ago that went 5 games but was super entertaining, How does that matchup go? Are Heat fans worried about that potential Sixers moving up to the five? That seems like something that everyone wants to kind of avoid right now. I know the Raptors and Celtics certainly don't want any part of Philly in the first round either, I would assume, just because they're weird and like kind of a wild card, super talented team that no one wants to touch. How does that Heat-Sixers matchup play out in your mind?
I would probably give... Ooh, I felt I'm going to get yelled at. I would probably give Philly a slight edge if they're healthy. You know, Miami really jumped things up in the regular season matchup with a bunch of zone. Mm-hmm. Philly did start figuring out some things towards the end of the second matchup, I want to say, but still lost that game. Philly's size still looms a little bit large if they're healthy and wearing to go. Miami doesn't have a real answer for Joel Embiid. Bam Adebayo is the best defender there, but you don't want him getting in foul trouble. And if there's anything Joel Embiid can do, he can get your bigs in foul trouble. Mm-hmm. So they kind of want to shift away from that matchup. But Myers never can't defend Joel Embiid. Philly doesn't have great shooters, but you can't just leave NBA players wide open. So I do think Philly still poses a pretty big matchup issue. And while Miami has been the NBA's best three-point shooting team, all it takes is a cold two-game stretch. Mm-hmm. And they do have some high-variance guys like a Kendrick Nunn. So that matchup definitely concerns me. I think Miami's definitely hoping that Indiana can hold serve somehow.
Yeah, that seems a little bit terrifying if I'm Miami. I mean, I'm a Raptors fan. I'm terrified of the Sixers too, even though like they're easy to make fun of. I still have like Joel Embiid being a plus 10,000 in that series last year in my head. It really scares me, because like they could in theory figure it out, and their half court defense, you know, regardless of what you think of their offense, their half-court defense is absurd. And I frankly would enjoy watching the Heat and Sixers score 65 points on one another over the course of an entire series. That would be very fun. But yeah, I think I'd probably lean Sixers there a little bit too, just based on Embiid, you know, just sort of a slight talent edge. Although, yeah, that zone stuff, I mean, the Heat ran that zone against the Raptors too at one point this season, and it was probably the Raptors' worst game of the season in terms of just offensive performance. I mean, they were awful. I think they hit something like a record for missed threes, if I'm recalling, although that seems like a year ago by now. But yeah, like the Heat can junk it up for sure, as you mentioned. They're scheduled, by the way. They play the Nuggets to open things up on August 1st, and they get the Raptors. They get the I didn't realize they play the Raptors. I should probably have remembered that. They have the Celtics and Heat on the 4th, the Bucks on the 6th, the Suns on the 8th, the Pacers on the 10th, the Thunder on the 12th, and the Pacers again on the 14th. So kind of middling. I mean, those Pacers games probably a little bit easier than they would have been, in the regular season. The Suns obviously are the team that everyone, I'm assuming, is expecting to beat while they're there. And then you have, I have no idea how to handicap any of this. The Bucks could be playing for nothing at this point, and you maybe want to hide some stuff for a potential second round matchup with Miami. So maybe they don't play anybody on the 6th of August in their game. So it's hard to handicap, but that is the schedule as it currently sits for the Miami Heat. Nikias, what are your general feelings on this Heat team? Like, can they surprise? Do you think, as much as the Sixers loom, like, I think that's not a series that either team wins 100% of the time. There's certainly a potential for them to move deeper and get into a second round series. Do you think it's like a pretty quick, ouster if they come up against the Bucks? I know they beat them at one point in the regular season, or maybe twice in the regular season this year, but they do feel like they're probably a little bit outgunned talent wise against Milwaukee. But I don't know. What do you like view this team's chances of making like a legitimately deep run to, say, a conference finals are in the Eastern Conference?
I think that's mostly going to depend on, oddly enough, I think it's mostly going to depend on who to get in the first round. Right. But if they get Philly, even if they beat the Sixers in that series, which they can't do, it's going to take a lot out of them. And if you have to worry about banging with Joel Embiid for six games, and then you get Giannis next round, I mean, there's only so much you can deal with. But as you mentioned, Miami has had success against Milwaukee this year. Milwaukee did not beat Miami this season. You always take regular season matchups with a grain of salt. But Miami has guys in Jimmy Butler and Bam Adebayo that can credibly bother Giannis at the very least. I think that series goes six or seven games regardless. Mm-hmm. That might be a little bit of a hot take, but I think Miami matches up with Milwaukee pretty well. Milwaukee, just like Miami, allows a lot of threes. So just like Miami could possibly go cold, they have been the best shooting team in the NBA this year. So if they drained a bunch of threes against Milwaukee's drop scheme, and if they drop Giannis down from 30 points per game to like 27, slight drop, but I mean those are the kind of margins that Miami Heat can win. Mm-hmm. So I think the ceiling for the Heat is an Eastern Conference Finals berth. I do think they can. I think that's a possibility for them. More likely, I think they're second round out. Mm-hmm.
I'd like to see it. I'd like to see them in the second round. I mean, as much as the Sixers are like kooky and weird, I think a Heat Bucks matchup would be pretty compelling, just as compelling as a Bucks 76ers matchup would be. The Heat don't carry with them the sort of inherent drama that Philly does, but Jimmy Butler is kind of drama on his own. he's a maniac. What's been the Jimmy Butler experience this year? I feel like he's the kind of guy who you just truly detest unless he's on your team, in which case you love him dearly. What's been the first year of Jimmy? Because it seems like a perfect marriage, really, between player and franchise, considering like the 3 a.m. wake up time for workouts and stuff like that. That seems like Pat Riley shit all over the place. But have you enjoyed the Jimmy experience? Is there like confidence in among Heat fans that he can kind of be the best player on a team that does some damage? Or is it more of a, hey, here's piece number one, hopefully we can get something to pair with him in the coming years? And there's like, I think, sort of tempered expectations maybe of what Jimmy can do as the number one.
I think it's more of the latter, but it's definitely both. The right. Heat fans love Jimmy. The Heat love Jimmy. To answer your initial question, it's been very quiet, which I think is the good thing, considering what Jimmy, the storylines that popped up with Jimmy in Chicago and mostly in Minnesota. Mm-hmm. Jimmy's basically been a godsend for the franchise. The young guys love him. The veterans respect him. Myers Leonard is probably Jimmy Butler's biggest fan. Eric Spoelstra obviously loves him. Pat Riley loves him. It seems like he has fit in like a glove, and it's just been the most predictable thing ever. He's been a great fit. But as for the second part of your question, if you go into Heat Twitter, which beware, you would probably think Bradley Beal is already a member of the team. I think a lot. Obviously, Giannis is the pipe dream, but I think everyone's kind of waiting on the other shoe to drop. If it's not Bradley Beal, it might be Victor Oladipo if he's healthy. I think that the Heat are definitely clamoring for another perimeter guy to pair with Jimmy Butler, and those two seem like the most likely bets. But I think Heat fans do understand that while Jimmy Butler is really good, they do know that there's a bit of a ceiling on this team, and that getting Jimmy Butler was step one.
Right.
Bam Adebayo turning into a legitimate all-star is probably step 1.5. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure anyone expected him to get this good this quickly. So I think that kind of accelerates things a little bit. But I think the next step is getting that second star creator.
Yeah, I mean, it would make them horrifying because Jimmy, like we saw last year in the playoffs, how good he was as sort of a secondary enemy. He kind of became the primary ball handler for the Sixers in that series because Ben Simmons could only stand in the dunker spot if he wanted to be effective. And, Embiid was kind of out of it a little bit too, and Butler just kind of carried it. And he was, I can tell you, there was a lot of fright involved in watching Jimmy Butler against the Raptors last season, and it was a pleasant relief when it was no longer him and it was like Eric Bledsoe across from the Raptors in the backcourt. I could also imagine Jimmy Butler getting into Eric Bledsoe's head quite a bit if they do play in a playoff series. That's something to keep in mind here. Lots of trash talk, lots of allusions to Eric Bledsoe helping the Raptors win a championship last season, all that good stuff. It'd be beautiful. but yeah, the Heat scare me for sure. As a fan of a team that has designs on pursuing Giannis, the Heat are, always in that conversation as well, and you'd never want to bet against Pat Riley. And they got a good crew there, man. Like, Bam Adebayo is freaking awesome. And if he establishes any sort of range, he becomes, like, very quickly one of, like, the two or three best bigs in the league, probably, because he's that good defensively. It's pretty terrifying. But I'm glad it seems as though the Raptors and Heat will be avoiding each other in their respective brackets, barring some sort of collapse by the Celtics against their kind of easy schedule. Maybe the Celtics come across a bunch of desperate ass teams and then they lose a bunch of games because the Grizzlies and the Pelicans and all these teams near the bottom are really trying to get in. Maybe that's what takes place, but I think it's most likely we see Heat in the fourth seed with the Sixers in the five, and that will be a freaking blast, and I can't wait to watch it. Nikias, any last shots here on the Heat? I mean, the Heat, I'm imagining, are the team that, you know, this whole argument of the bubble is safer for these players than like the general population. I think that's true of the Heat and Magic and probably no other team. but like, I don't know, any parting shots here before we wrap up here on the Heat and their sort of chances within the East?
I would just like to say that I don't see how anyone expected Duncan Robinson to turn into Steph Curry this year. I think that's been a very fun storyline to follow. But overall, I think the Heat have already kind of overachieved this year.
Right.
Obviously, like a first-round exit or even a quick second-round exit would be disappointing to watch. But this was supposed to be step one in getting back to kind of like the Big Three glory. Maybe not that specifically, but just trying to build a championship team. Getting Jimmy Butler was the first step. A lot of projections had Miami as a low 40s win team. Mm-hmm. It looks like they were going to eclipse that rather easily. So I think it's easy to be proud of what the Heat have done this year. A lot of guys have come out of nowhere. Kendrick Nunn has come out of nowhere. Duncan Robinson has come out of nowhere. Bam Adebayo took a capital L leap instead of a lowercase L leap with Hassan Whiteside out of the way. Mm-hmm. Like, it's just been a fun year. I think it's been, if not Eric Spoelstra's best coaching job, it's definitely been one of his top two or three, just the way he's put a bunch of players in position to succeed. It's been a fun team to watch.
Yeah, as much as I on this podcast have called the Miami Heat the team in the NBA with the most guys who look like problematic YouTubers, I find them to be very easy to respect as a general sort of operation. And Eric Spoelstra is great. And this is definitely my like favorite version of Jimmy Butler. I've never been a terribly huge fan, but that probably has something to do with the fact that he would cook the Raptors every time he would play them, no matter what team he played for. So maybe that's part of the bias there. Either way, this was great, and it was awesome chatting with you, man. I'm so happy we get you on the podcast. Where can people check out your work?
They can find me at Bleacher Report, SB Nation, Five Reasons Sports. That's where you can find most of my Heat work. But in general, just follow me on Twitter, Nikias NBA. I'll be tweeting a bunch of basketball stuff and a bunch of puns.
Yeah, one of the smartest and most fun guys on NBA Twitter. So please follow Nikias right now if you have not already done so. That is going to do it for today's podcast. Big thanks to Nikias for coming on. You can also find me at Woodley Sean. Subscribe to, rate, review this podcast wherever you get your podcasts. It's very much appreciated when you take the time to do that. Also, please check out all the Locked On Podcast Network offerings we have up for you. You can also check out my other podcast with myself and Katie Heindel at Basketball on Twitter with two H's. I almost said that very strangely because I'm tongue-tied. Either way, Basketball on Twitter, on Apple, Spotify, other places you get your podcasts as well. We also have a Patreon page called patreon.com/basketball with two H's. If you would like to chip us $4 and be part of our Patreon community, we're getting closer to doing bonus episodes over there as well. So thank you for that if you have done that already. And thanks for that in the future, in advance, if you're planning on doing that down the line. And that's going to do it for today's episode. Thank you so much for tuning in. We'll check back in later in the week with some more previews of the teams across the Eastern Conference as well. Katie's going to stop by once again as we'll do another edition of Retiring Every Raptor, probably near the end of the week. So just keep an eye out for that. And we will talk to you again probably Tuesday, Wednesday. I don't know when it's going to be. Sometime this week with another episode of Locked On Raptors.